Good morning. How many of you guys watch reality TV shows? Anybody? Name me some reality TV shows. What's out there these days? Duck Dynasty. What's that about? A bunch of ducks? Duck calls. That's cool. We have a TV show about duck calls. Huh? They're Christian duck calls. What else? All my kids love that show. Huh? The Amazing Race. That's about a race. Okay? That's an amazing race. What else is out there? What's that? Big Brother. Bachelor and Bachelorette. You watch that religiously? Danny, she's not talking. You're telling you something. I don't know, brother. What's that? There's a bunch of cooking ones now, right? Chef Wars or something like that. I don't know. And makeup artist. Survivor. Hero. Huh? The what? Honey Boo Boo? Is that what you said? Okay. We're just having to start to edit for church already, aren't we? I haven't seen a lot of those, but we were getting ready to watch a movie. We were watching them Hoarders. Horrible show. I went upstairs immediately and started cleaning out our closets, and it made me nervous. I had anxiety the whole night. It's like, oh my goodness. Thank goodness you cannot smell on TV. Right? Guys going out and puking on national TV because they clean out someone's refrigerator. Like, that's entertainment. That's what I turned TV on to watch, right? That was really joyful. I wanted to go cut myself or something. I don't know. It was terrible, right? And then there was one on the midst of this. They're advertising Dance Moms, I think. Oh, my goodness. And all you saw was every commercial they advertised Dance Moms, and it was about some lady wanting to, you know, throw down with another lady. It's like, that's really great to model for our children, right? You think about that. What's the purpose of taking your little girls to dance? Punishment. Spoken from a guy, from a dude. Right? Or like I saw on the news the other day about the T-ball. How many heard about the T-ball fight? Two dads throwing down because of T-ball and a bad call. Or one dad's estimation, right? Now, that's amazing, right? Think about, what's the purpose of T-ball? Teach them how to play ball. And what's the purpose of sports? To have fun, to learn, to build character, right? Now, why would a dad get mad at another dad about T-ball? They're five and they run to the wrong direction sometimes, right? Which is really fun for the parents to watch anyway. Too competitive, right? And all of a sudden, everything that you're trying to teach your child about character and keep them out of trouble, right? That's what we say, keep them active, keep them out of trouble. All of a sudden, it gets hijacked by parents trying to live out their dreams and fantasies through their children. Amen? Right? September 11th, 2001. What happened then? The World Trade Center. And how did that happen? Two planes flew into it, and how'd they fly into it? They were hijacked. And how did the guys get on the planes? They bought tickets and walked on. Sometimes, things can hijack our lives. They can just walk right in, but not knowing the agenda, not knowing the purpose. Here's a scheduled flight, a regular routine flight. And all of a sudden, somebody subversively has a different idea different way, and they take over this plane, which we call hijacking. And hijacking doesn't happen just on planes. You can hijack anything, can't you? You can hijack a meeting by your attitude. You can hijack, a family picnic by your attitude. You can hijack a t-ball game by your anger. Because hijacking is when someone comes in and takes over and diverts it into another direction. Spins it off out of the direction which it was intended to go. If you have your Bibles, turn with me to the book of Esther. I want to tell you the story of Esther. We're going to read some of the text, but really the book of Esther is really one story, and it's about Esther. It's not complex, right? But this is almost like a reality TV show when you think about it, because it has all the human drama, all the ins and outs, all the backbiting, all the conniving, but there's also hijacking going on. Now, I never ever do this. I don't think I've ever done it in all my years, 31 years of ministry. But I want to tell you how to listen to my sermon today. That sounds weird to come out of my mouth, but I want to challenge you. As you're thinking through this story, I really want to challenge you not to think about other people. I really want to challenge you not to think about your spouse, your Aunt Margaret, or whoever. I want you to really try to personalize whatever is being said today. What's that have to do with me? How does it involve me? I really want you to have kind of tunnel vision, put the blinders on to everyone else. Because often in these stories, like reality TV shows, are really popular and famous because you can see other characters in them. And you can see your neighbors sometimes. You know, my kids, Jake loves Duck Dynasty because he loves the characters in it. And, you know, if he weren't nine, he would be growing a beard right now. But he gets caught up in the characters of it all, and then he can relate, and he says, that guy reminds me of, you know, so-and-so, or this old guy, or whatever, that's really funny. And he likes to cast the characters in real human life. And sometimes that's what reality... So today, I want to challenge you not to think about anyone else in this story, but how does it apply to you, and what's that mean to you today? Esther chapter 1, verse 1 says this. This is what happened. That's how a good story starts. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush. At that time, King Xerxes reigned from his royal throne in the citadel of Susa. And in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his nobles and officials. The military leaders of Persia and Media, the princes and the nobles of the province were present. So the king's going to throw a big party. For a full 180 days, he displays the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and the glory of his majesty. When these days were over, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days in the enclosed garden of the king's palace for all the people from the least to the greatest who were in the citadel of Susa. The garden had hangings of white and blue linen, fastened with cords of white linen and purple material to silver rings on marble pillars. There were couches of gold and silver and on mosaic pavement of porphyr, marble, mother of pearl, and other costly stones. Wine was served in goblets of gold, each one different from the other, and the royal wine was abundant in keeping with the king's liberality. By the king's command, each guest was allowed to drink in his own way, for the king instructed all the wine stewards to serve each man what he wished. This is a throwdown party, right? I mean, and this is displaying this guy's only been in rule for 3 years and he throws this big banquet. And how long does it last? 187 days, 180 days just in the outskirts. It's all around, you know, big banquet and everything. And then another special, like, let's close this thing up. Let's wrap it up with a really big party, 7 days. And everyone's invited now. Everyone from the least to the great, and not just the nobility, but everyone in the kingdom going, and it's like, this is putting on airs, let me show you my gold and silver, and everybody's drinking out of a gold goblet. In other words, these aren't manufactured, no. in China somewhere. These are handmade because each has its own gold goblet. They're sitting on couches of gold and silver. And that's why the writer describes the linens of purple and blue and white. Go, this guy's got abundance. A bunch. And then not on top of that, but in our modern day vernacular, pardon for this language in church, but it's an open bar. Because each guy can drink as much as he wants, however he decides. The king is being liberal. Go, open bar and it's on my tab. And so these people are going crazy celebrating the king. Verse 8 says, Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the royal palace of King Xerxes. So not only is he having a great celebration, but in the meantime, the ladies also, kind of like our women's retreat, they have their own little thing, right? Kind of a cool time for ladies, kind of like we call it a mother and me tea. They're like drinking wine and celebrating as well, right? So the king is having this great banquet. And then the queen also does. Verse 10 says this, on the seventh day when King Xerxes was high in spirit from wine. Any questions about that? This is reality TV now. This is reality Bible, okay? And now the king is drunk. That's what it means. Okay, just anybody wanting to know, in the Hebrew it means high on spirits and wine. He was drunk. Okay, you're welcome. Yeah, that's all my years of scholarly education paying off right there, right? I discerned that by the Spirit. And he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him, Mehum, Biztha, Harbonai, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcas, to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. Oh, so now the king's, you know, been partying for a long time, and he drunk. Hey, bring him my old lady. Put the crown on her, dress her up really pretty. She's like eye candy. Because not only does he want to impress everyone else with all of his royalty and all of his money and all of his stuff, now he's like, hey, bring in the lady, the eye candy person. Bring in her so that I can show off. And make her look good, too. Doll her up and put the crown on her because I want all of everybody to know not only do I have lots of money and lots of stuff, but I got good looking, too. What's the purpose of a king, by the way? What's the purpose of anybody with authority? Anybody in leadership? The whole idea is to serve the people. The whole idea of a king is to rule over a kingdom with honor and justice and to take care of the people. What's this king doing? He's hijacking the whole kingdom and making it all about him. Let me tell you about me. Let's have a party celebrating all the vastness of my stuff. And let me just rub it in a little bit more because not only am I rich, but I got the good-looking lady too. This is when your position hijacks your identity. When you get caught up in all that you are, all that you have, and all your stuff, then you forget who you really are. And you forget about everyone else. And this guy's forgotten about everyone else but him. And now he whistles for his wife. Says verse 12. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. And the king became furious and burned with anger. You know, that's what happens often when our own pride hijacks our identity. That when something blocks us from getting what we want or some feeling that we desire, anger is right there, isn't it? Sometimes when something makes us afraid, we become angry. We fear loss, we become angry. We fear looking stupid or being embarrassed, we become angry. This guy now is showing off everyone. Hey, everybody's got their gold goblets. Everybody's drinking, having a merry old time. And all of a sudden, someone denies him something he wants. Children are that way, aren't they? That's a sign of also immaturity. that even though as we get older we should grow and become wiser and more patient and more mature, sometimes we hijack our maturity by giving into those things. All those things that we think we should consume ends up consuming us. So now he's mad. Listen what happens. Verse 13 says, since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of the law and justice, he spoke with the wise men who understood the times and were close to the king. Karshana, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsena, and Mimikon. The seven nobles of Persian Media who had special access to the king and were highest in the kingdom. So he's like, bring out all of his lawyers and commanders and people like that. And according to law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. He goes, so what's my legal obligations? What's my legal possibilities here, guys? Then one of them says, the Mimikon replied in the presence of the king and the nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against the nobles and the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. And there will be no end of disrespect and discord. You hear what they're saying now? Oh, because she didn't come at the king's command. Now all the other noble women are going to hear about this and go, well, if she ain't going, I don't have to go to my husband either. And these guys are going, well, legally, we got to do something about these women maybe disobeying their husbands. Therefore, he continues, verse 19, therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never to get into the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. Then, when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all this vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. The king and his nobles were pleased with this advice, so the king did as Mimikon proposed. He sent his dispatches to all parts of the kingdom, to each province in their own script, and each people in his own language, proclaiming in each people's tongue that every man should be ruler over his own household. Maybe, just maybe, guys, this is a slight overreaction. I told her I wanted pork chops and she made bacon. Call him the lawyer. You know, it's like, what are we going to do? And from that time on, it's like, okay, I know what you can do, king. You're the king. Let's write a law that all women now must be submissive to their husbands. And they all go, yea, amen, verily, verily. And what's good for us is also good for all the other women throughout all the province. And let all languages understand that women should obey their husbands. There's not a man among you that has the guts to say amen right now. Everybody was really deathly silent going, wow. I'm not sure what to do with that. Right? That's the funny thing is men everywhere get this idea of authority sometimes from the Bible like that. I know. I will use my authority to get advantage for me. And guess what? Your position has now just hijacked your ministry. Your position in the name of authority just hijacked your love and care and tenderness to those who are closest to you. Because they made it a law, and not only did King Xerxes say it's good for me, but let's have all the men, make all the women be submissive, because that's what we do when we have authority. We take our authority and we hijack our relationships. We take our authority and our position and we undermine everything that God has intended for our relationship. Men, sometimes us as guys, we really don't know what to do because often our wives are smarter and they can talk better than us. And so sometimes we pull the man card, or sometimes they're challenging us to live in a spiritual way and we feel like we don't do well at spirituality. I don't feel like I'm good at it. So you know what we do? We hijack our spirituality and we go, I'm going to go do something I'm good at. I tinker well in the garage. I'm good at hunting. Fish don't talk back. I'm good at tinkering. I can fix stuff. I can do stuff. And we hijack our ministry and hide from that which God has called us to. We live a hijacked existence sometimes. Especially when very few of us go, I do serving God very well. I do spirituality excellent. When we go, I thought men were called to lead. Well, we lead in authority. But lead spiritually, I'm not good at that, so I'm checking out. I leave that for her and to the children. And we live a hijacked existence as a male-dominated society. But we live secondary citizens in a spiritually dominated world. That's reality TV. That's a reality even in this text. So, this little reaction now. They write laws that women must be submissive. And now, what happens to Queen Vashti? Kicked out, and now he's on the hunt for a new wife. Right? So the story goes like this. Now he's hunting for a new wife, and there just so happens to be one of the... This is during the time of exile. And so the Jews are in the citadel of Susa. And so there happens to be a really pretty girl named Esther. And Esther's parents are both passed away. And so she's being raised by her uncle Mordecai. And Mordecai hangs out around the palace. Well, one day, Esther gets picked to be one of the candidates to become queen. You know what they do for this whole time? For the next 12 months, they have beauty lessons. They learn how to put on their makeup. They have... You know, they get them all dolled up, and for the next 12 months, she becomes part of the king's harem until he picks who he wants to become his queen. And anytime a lady would go into his presence, she can ask for something or one thing to be brought with her. This whole time, Esther asked for nothing. And the king begins to take a liking to her. And guess what happens? Esther, a Jew in exile, is made to be queen. Now, how can she do that? Mordecai, her uncle, says, don't tell anybody your ancestry. Don't tell anybody you're Jewish. Shh, that's between you and me. Keep quiet. And every day, Mordecai watches over her. Every day, he's traveling to the palace, watching over her, making sure that she's okay. This is a good uncle taking care of his now adopted daughter. And so we pick up the story in Esther chapter 2, verse 17. It says, now the king was attracted to Esther more than any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his nobles and officials. And he proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. So now she's made king or queen. Verse 19 says, when the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate. And this is her uncle. But Esther had kept secret her family background and nationality, just as Mordecai had told her to do. For she continued to follow Mordecai's instructions as she had done when he was bringing her up. During the time Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate, Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the door, became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot and told Queen Esther, who in turn reported to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And when the report was investigated and found to be true, the two officials were hanged on gallows, and all this recorded in the book of the annals in the presence of the king. So this is kind of a cool reality twist, isn't it? Mordecai's just hanging out, looking over for Esther, and one day he's sitting there by the gate and around the corner, these two guys are going, let's kill him tomorrow at midnight. And so he gets a hold of Esther and says, hey, these two guards are really going to conspire and they're going to hijack the kingdom. They're going to kill the king. And so they find out and end up catching these guys. And Mordecai is a hero. And then they write it down as this part of our history books. But guess what happens? Nothing. It kind of goes away to the side. There's no celebration for Mordecai or anything. Chapter 3, verse 1. After these events, King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him, but Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor. So Haman gets honored. Mordecai is just a Jew in exile. And everybody else is going, oh, Haman, he's the man. That's probably where we got his name. I don't know, but that's probably not good biblical scholarship, but it works. Anyway, so everybody's going, oh, there's Haman, yeah. And Mordecai goes, what's up? I don't think he said that, but that's my version. I like it. Verse 3 says, then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, why you disobey the king's command? Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behavior would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. And they go, hey, Haman, this Jew, this exile, he don't salute when you walk by. What are you going to do about it? When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honor, he was enraged. That's another thing that sometimes hijacks us. Pride, prejudice, racism. All those things are great hijackers of our society and our communities. When we get our pride hurt, it hijacks our sensibility. And guess what happens when Mordecai's pride is smashed? Because after all, he's the second in command now, and this one guy won't salute him. He has all this other stuff, but listen to what he says. Verse 7 says, in the 12th year of King Xerxes, in the first month of the month of Nisan, they cast the pure, that is, the lot, in the presence of Haman, selected day and month, and he fell on the 12th month in the month of Adar. Then Haman said to King Xerxes, there is a certain people dispersed and scattered among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom, whose customs are different from those of all the other people, and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them. And I will put 10,000 talents of silver into the royal treasury for the men who carry out this business. This is pride being hijacked. This is sanity being hijacked by pride. Not only does he want to take out Mordecai because he's a Jew, he's like, let's get rid of them all. Let's get rid of all the Jews. So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. Keep the money, the king said to Haman, and do with these people as you please. So there's a time ticking. Now the hourglass turns, and there's a time ticking on a date and a time when all these Jews are going to be executed. And this time is only for the logistics of it, so they can send out word to all the kingdoms to bring in all the Jews, round up all the Jews, and we'll kill them all. All because of why? One guy doesn't pay tribute to another guy. You ever get mad at someone that you feel doesn't respect you? You feel disrespected? Did that ever ruin your whole day? Is there ever a time where you can't let go? Let it just be in the past. Let bygones be bygones, as they say. This guy takes it to another level. This is pride hijacking sanity. This is what happens when kings, governments get hijacked. Societies get hijacked. Countries get hijacked. Chris was going to talk about Haiti on Wednesday. Every leader that gets elected, supposedly, there's like 130 different parties in Haiti, and whoever kills off the other leaders and connives their way and robs all the votes, then they become the president of Haiti, and then they just rob the country blind of all of its resources. Haiti is an island in paradise in the middle of the beautiful Caribbean Sea, and it's a trash dump because it keeps getting hijacked by people's pride and arrogance and greed. Personal lives get hijacked all the time, don't they? Families get hijacked. Remember, half the reason we have a lot of the stories in the Scriptures is to tell us how people get hijacked by their own pride and by their own agendas. Remember Judas Iscariot? A disciple of Jesus. And he gets hijacked by money. This idea, I'm going to make a little more. Think of Jonah. Jonah gets hijacked by a whale, I guess. But really, that's his ride to freedom. Because what really hijacked him was escape from obeying the Lord when he didn't want to obey the Lord. Moses hijacked his life for 40 years. Killed someone and ran off into the desert, and I'll just hide out here, hijacking his calling to lead the people to freedom. Story after story after story in the Bible. King David had everything in his fingertips. He has the ancestry and the lineage that's going to produce the Messiah. And lust hijacks him and almost gets the kingdom tore away from him, just like it did King Saul, who was the first king of over Israel and had everything going for him. And jealousy and insecurity hijacks his whole kingdom and his whole ministry. This is that point when I said, don't look at other people, don't think about other people. But what hijacks you? What hijacks your life? What creeps in? You know, you cannot hijack a plane by riding on top of it. You've got to get passage inside of it. And there are things that we let inside of ourselves. Things that come in as if they're passengers that we invite them in and carry them along our way. And it hijacks us and it takes us places we never dreamt we would go. There are things that hijack us. There are things that hijack our families, hijacks our minds, hijacks our attitudes, hijacks our spirituality, our walk with the Lord. And most of the time, we let them in. We let them in. You know, America Forever changed now. You know, we fuss and complain about the increased security levels and infringement on our rights as citizens and all those things. But we have to be extra diligent now because America Forever changed, didn't it? Because now you got to do a lot better screening of what you let in and what you don't. What you allow, who you allow on the plane and who you don't. Think about it. If you don't know what hijacks your life, you're in danger. If you can't identify those possibilities, that what can hijack me, if you're not paying attention to those things, if you're not aware of what you're letting into your life, then you're in peril. And you need to be able to identify the possibilities, what hijacks your life, what hijacks your family, what hijacks God's calling for you, what hijacks your ministry. Haman is hijacked by his ego. And he hijacks the king's authority by saying, let's kill all the Jews. Now, Mordecai is terrified and he goes to Queen Esther. We pick up the story in chapter 4. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. And every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. They all go, we're going to die here. We're going to die. When Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress and she sent clothes for him to put on instead of his sackcloth. But he would not accept him. And then Esther summoned Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, assigned to attend her and ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay in the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, to show Esther and explain to her. And he told him to urge her to go into the king's presence to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. Hathach went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. And then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the gold scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." And when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you're in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this." So Mordecai and all the Jews are mourning and wailing, and Esther's in this palace. She doesn't know what's going on. And then Mordecai lets her in on what's going on through messengers. And he's in sackcloth and ashes, and he's mourning. And she goes, "No one gets to go. He'll cut my neck off. You don't just walk in the king's palace. That's the law. He has to summon, and he hadn't called me for a long time." And Mordecai is asking Esther not to let her position hijack her responsibility. He says, "Maybe, just maybe, God has put you there and placed you for such a time as this. Maybe this is your moment, Esther, to shine." Esther says, "I tell you what, have everybody pray. Have everybody pray for me, and I'll approach the king." And so she approaches the king, and she invites him to dinner. And him and Haman. She invites him to dinner, and then she gets there, and she's a little nervous, and she goes, "I invited you to dinner so that I can invite you to a banquet." You know, so it's like, she's pretty nervous because she doesn't just walk in the king. It's like, hey, you know, the king's full of himself, so it's like, yeah, let's celebrate me. How about, that's great. And she goes, "I want to invite you here so I can invite you to a banquet tomorrow. Cool. Me and Haman, and bring Haman with you." And so both these guys, full of themselves, Haman goes back to his family and goes, "Guess what? Someone's having a banquet tomorrow. Cool. Guess who's invited? Nobody but me." And he goes, "In the midst of all that, you know what happens? Every day I walk by this Mordecai dude, and he doesn't bow to me. I'm the best guy in the kingdom. I'm second only to the king, everyone else. And even Queen Esther invites me. And this one guy, he goes, I'll take all the banquets and throw them out if this guy would just bow to me. It eats me up." That's what happens when ego hijacks your person. You can't think of anything else but that one little slight. That night, the king can't sleep. You know what kings can't do when they can't sleep? This is what this one does. Chapter 6, verse 1 says that. "That night the king could not sleep, so he ordered the book of the Chronicles, the record of his reign, to be brought to him and read to him." "I can't sleep. How about someone come read my history to me? Because that's a good bedtime story. It's all about me." You know? It's like, this is reality Bible. "It was found recorded there that Mordecai exposed Bigtha and Teresh, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway, who conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. What honor and recognition has Mordecai received for this?" the king asked. "Nothing has been done for him," his attendants answered. Overlook the guy who saved my life. Let's do something really special. So you know what he does? Of all people, he says, "Haman, yeah, I want you to do, there's a guy out there that I want to celebrate because he's more special than anyone else in the kingdom." And Haman's going, "More, please. Well, I want you to do a favor. We're going to take him and we're parading around town." And Haman's going, Ah, I like it. And Haman's thinking the whole time it's him. Guess what? He goes, there's this Mordecai guy that saved my life from being conspired against to kill. And what I want you to do, here, I want you to take this chauffeur's cap, put it on, and driving around in the limo. They don't really have a limo on that day, but our modern day. Driving around the limo and parading through the town and celebrate him. Of all people, Haman knows this is the guy. Cannot do this. The next day, banquet time. Esther is visibly upset. The king asks her what's on her mind, extends the scepter to her, and she says, this Haman guy, he's going to kill all of my descendants, all the Jews in the kingdom because of this guy. The king's now mad. He goes in a rageful fit. He's going out to reverse the order. Haman throws himself at the mercy of Queen. When the king leaves, she's on her palace pallet or whatever, over on her couch, and Haman's just throwing himself at her mercy, trying to talk her out of it. At that moment, the king walks back in, and he thinks he's trying to jump on her. He goes, what? You're going to seduce my wife right in front of me? What should I do with this guy? And they go, oh, by the way, Haman has these gallows built to execute Mordecai first and foremost. So when the king goes, what shall I do with this guy? He's trying to seduce my wife and he's caused all this trouble. And a couple of us in the group, well, there's some fresh gallows built out there. This is a crazy story, isn't it? So Haman ends up getting hanged on the very gallows he built for Mordecai. Mordecai gets exalted to a high rank in the kingdom, and Esther saves her people. That's reality. All because one uncle teaches his daughter about character and says, don't let your beauty and your position hijack your person. Oh, if we teach our kids, don't let your talent, your athleticism, your person be hijacked by all this other stuff. And maybe when it's your time, you'll rise. Maybe when it's your time, you'll shine. And she takes her fear and she steps towards it and she saves her people. That's the reality of this whole story. Jesus in Matthew 4 records a story of Satan comes and he tries to hijack Jesus' earthly ministry. He says, how about power? How about feeding you when you're hungry? How about ruler? And Jesus doesn't trade in his crown of thorns for a crown of royalty on his head. He doesn't trade in his scepter for the cross. He doesn't trade in his throne for a tomb. But because he doesn't get his ministry hijacked, Jesus saves us. Now, where are you in this story? Because this morning is just about you. I'm about the worship team to come up and close our service. But I want you to focus just for the next 5 minutes on you. No one else around you, not the person next to you, not other people that you think this would be great advice for. What hijacks you? What's the potential of hijacking you? I have somebody's music. Think about your life. What has the potential to hijack your family? What has the potential to hijack your relationships? What has the potential to hijack your children's spiritual life? The only way you can hijack a plane is get on board and get to the control. Because that's how you hijack a plane. And that's how Satan wants to hijack this country. He wants to grab the leadership, those that are in charge of families, those that are in charge of their households, those that are leading others. And he wants to get inside and he wants to hijack us. Sometimes it's busyness. Sometimes it's distraction. Sometimes it's worry. Sometimes it's sin. And the whole time, we're at the controls and we get to decide what we're going to do. But the only way they can hijack your ministry is he grabs a hold of you and removes you from the driver's seat. You're the pilot of this plane. You're the pilot of your own personal walk. You're the pilot of your own personal family. You're the pilot of this church. Because Satan can hijack churches as he hijacks the pilots as well. This morning, I want you to bow before the Lord and ask him, what hijacks me? What has the potential to hijack my family? What has the potential to hijack my ministry? And then the other thing I want to ask yourself this morning, simply this. What am I going to do about it today? What am I going to do starting today? Maybe you're called today for such a time as this. Your children are over there. Your friends are around here. Your family's in this room today. Mordecai says the same thing to Esther. Esther, somebody's got to step up. And you're in the position to do that. That's what I would challenge each and every person here this morning. Someone's got to step up. And you're in position to do that today. This is your opportunity. Maybe you're called for such a time as this to seek the Lord and say, where to you from here? Be the pilot and be the captain of my life. Let's stand, worship the Lord. God asks you to step up and step out. I challenge you to do that today. Just come and seek him. Seek whatever mercies you need. Seek whatever grace you need. Seek whatever guidance you need. But the altar's open for God to lead.